Well, hello everyone. It's been a while, hasn't it? Sorry about that. Life just gets in the way and unfortunately the podcast seems to get pushed to the bottom of the pile. However, I do have a brilliant episode for you today with none other than Matt Jarrisy, who, as you know, is one of my favourites. And we're going to talk about a really important topic, which is water. So in this episode, we cover the different types of water filters that you can get and the pros and cons of each, and also water structuring. So we start off with a super interesting conversation about actually the structure of water and how, when it is structured properly, it can actually be more hydrating for our cells. And Matt talks us through really amazing information about, well, for example, in nature, do we ever really see water being stagnant? No, it's usually moving. And so when we can structure it in a similar way to how we find it in nature by putting it through things like a vortex, it organizes itself differently. Anyway, it's fascinating stuff and I hope you really enjoy it. And if the water structuring bit doesn't speak to you, then hopefully the practical applications regarding the different types of water filters will. So without further ado, here is a conversation I recorded with Matt way back when about water. And I am live with Matt Jarrisy. Hey Matt, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi Grace, I'm happy to be back for round three.
I was about to say, is this round two or round three?
Yeah.
It's round three. Matt and I have recorded two episodes in the past, one on histamine, which was brilliant, and the other one was about iron, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right.
Gosh, that feels like many moons ago.
Yeah, it does.
Today, we're going to be talking a lot about water. So I was just saying to you before we hit record that one of the questions I get asked a lot is which water filter do I have? And I have a post on this on my Patreon, if people are interested, although it is behind a very minimal paywall. But this podcast is going to be useful information for everybody. And yeah, we're gonna get right into it. But first of all, we were gonna start with a little conversation about water itself. And Matt is gonna teach us all about water structuring and energetics. So Matt, over to you.
Yeah, so I think water energetics is quite a new concept for lots of people. But actually it's been around for a long time. And one of the earliest researchers who looked into this was a guy called Victor Schauberger, an Austrian forester. And between the sort of 1900s and 1950, he spent a lot of time observing like water in its natural habitat and observed lots of things that didn't quite add up. So one of the things that he first looked at was, how does a trout in a raging torrent stay very still almost without moving, without being rushed down the river? And so these are the questions that Schauberger sort of proposed. And he wanted to find out, are there different layers to water? Does it have different structures? And is it affected by things like temperature or even frequency? And what he found was that water actually has, it's more of a kind of living substance, basically, as opposed to just this generic H2O that comes out of our tap. And that actually, water wants to behave in such a way to improve its kind of energetic quality. So these are some of the questions that Schauberger sort of looked at. And if we kind of fast forward to kind of now, we've got researchers like Gerald Pollack, who are kind of trying to pull some of this research together and bringing more of a kind of scientific view on it. And what sort of Pollack found was that water, there might be sort of a fourth phase to water. So often we think of water being kind of like a vapor and a solid and sort of so on. But actually, there might be this fourth phase to it, where it's actually not any of those things, but it's more of a, it's sort of a different state on its own. And it has more of a kind of viscous sort of nature. And what Pollack's sort of research found was that when water's next to a kind of a sort of hydrophilic surface, so a water-loving surface, you get these exclusion zones where water sort of pushes out impurities and it has a negative charge. So this was kind of an interesting sort of observation that people hadn't really sort of picked up on, that water could exist in a state that we hadn't really initially thought of. Now, these sort of concepts were actually put forward by different researchers before, like, Pollack brought this in, but they were often shut down and just being like, this is something that couldn't happen. And what's interesting about this idea of structured water is that in this state, water's arranged in sort of a honeycomb structure. So this is what we mean by the term structure, is that it is not just kind of all over the place. It's actually layered in sort of lattices, in like a sort of honeycomb, and it has this kind of charge potential. And if that is the case, then water has then in some ways, this structured water has the ability to sort of generate a charge. And the kind of idea is that actually in our bodies, we have this structured water and we can make this structured water in our cells. And perhaps this structured water is actually playing a role in lots of energetic sort of processes in our body. So these are really new ideas around water and how our body actually generates energy. And one of the interesting things that has been found is that infrared light, which is almost half of the sun's spectrum, rapidly increases the exclusion zone of structured water. This is one of the observations that was found. So it might be that on one level, we're kind of constantly recharging this structured water in our cells via just exposure to infrared, which is all around us, right? It radiates from the earth and from the sun. And that actually we're kind of being recharged by light in that sense. So, so I think it's a really interesting concept to actually think about. And now there's lots of really good science behind this kind of fourth phase of water. So it's not just this kind of idea that sort of Schauberger put forward and that people didn't really believe him at the time. And actually just leading on to water filtration, one of the interesting things about this structured water is that it actually excludes impurities. So by actually harnessing that structured water, we might actually be able to improve the actual quality of the water itself as well.
Mm. So how does one come by structured water?
Well, so like structured water is just like naturally occurring in nature, right? Because that's just what water wants to... That's kind of water's natural goal, as it were, is to become more structured. And so there are different ways you can actually structure water. So like one of the ways that we just mentioned was infrared light.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Schauberger's work, his work was around motion and actually using that vortical motion, using vortexing, which you might have come across. And so... what that does is when we kind of use that vortex motion in water, it actually cools the water down, which seems odd because you think if you are kind of spinning something, you're generating sort of friction and heat, but actually it cools it down and it brings water down closer to its anomaly point, which is 4 degrees. And that's an unusual component of water, that unlike other liquids, it reaches its densest state at 4 degrees.
Okay.
So, that might sound a little bit kind of complicated, but basically this is kind of another state of water that our cells are sort of likely making,
mm-hmm.
that we are receiving from the sun and sort of infrared and light. And also we can also maybe achieve that through motion and also frequency as well.
So back in the day before industrialization and... sanitation, I guess, when we may have drunk water from a nearby stream or a brook or something like that, would that be, obviously that's, we can't do that anymore because unfortunately humans have polluted the planet, but would that have been closer to this kind of structured, like, ideal state of water? But then obviously what is coming from our taps these days is kind of the complete opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. So like back in the day, we would have had access to sort of spring water, which again is naturally going to be much more structured, right? Because the water's moving in a way which is it's naturally inclined to do. But if you look at our water systems now, they're all in these kind of straight cylindrical pipes.
Mm. Okay, so it's about the water being able to move and how it naturally would and just like do its thing.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that Schauberger proposed was that water should never move in a straight line, because that's just never something that we observe in nature.
Mm.
And you should always have it to move in a kind of winding fashion, basically. So this is one of the things that that I think our water pipes and sort of delivery system gets very wrong. One of the other issues with our water now is that we keep water in these big open reservoirs where it's exposed just to the ultraviolet, which basically damages the water, because you have the sort of carbonic acid in the water dissolving into carbon dioxide, and water never wants to be exposed to high levels of sunlight. And you can see that in rivers and things, that trees will naturally grow over rivers to give it some shade, and water will run much quicker when it's in a sort of cooler state. So all the things that we do with water now is just a kind of against what sort of appears in nature. So really it's about, how does nature do it? How does nature treat water? And can we actually replicate that now?
Mm. You know, you mentioned this anomaly point of 4 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that's just when water is at its densest.
Yes.
It's most dense. What does the anomaly, like, what does that mean?
Well, it just means that at that point, the water is able to hold as much information as it can at that state. And densest is really referring to sort of the volume, as it were.
Okay.
So at that point, that's where water is generally inclined to go. So if you vortex water, that's the kind of temperature that it starts to bring down to. Whereas if you start heating water up above that, then I think it sort of loses its sort of energetic potential.
Isn't that crazy that you vortex water and it gets colder?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make any sense, because you think that, and this is why, you know, the inside of things like a tornado are like very cold, right? Because I think a lot of our kind of the way like sort of humans do things now, and a lot of our ideas around energy in general are all about sort of explosion. But actually a lot of Schauberger's research around like free energy was more about implosion, and that you could generate far more energy that way. And that was a more natural cycle of things.
Yeah. And I love how you said that potentially our cells are being recharged by the sun. I mean, we know like there's so much more in kind of public discourse these days, thankfully, about, you know, the benefits of sun exposure and what that does for our human physiology. But that's a really cool concept.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in some ways, that is the human version of photosynthesizing.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of the reasons why we feel good being in the sun, is that we're probably structuring the water in ourselves, right? Because we literally are, if you lined up all the molecules, as Jared Pollack says in this book, we would be 99% water, basically, if you actually line them all up. So, yeah, well, I think it's one of those things which is probably one of the most important questions to ask, is like, what actually is going on with water in our body? How is it behaving? And what are actually the benefits of having water in this state? I mean, even in ancient Greek philosophy, they used to say that water was like the original form in which all bodies were created. So I think we need to move back to this idea that water is actually more of a revered substance, and not just this thing that we can sort of treat very poorly.
Mm.
Because water is the kind of universal lubricant, right? And so it attaches itself to everything. So if we treat water like very poorly, then it's just going to absorb all of those sort of nasty things it's exposed to, and in that sense, water is going to be harmful to humans. It's not going to be of a benefit. But I think if you treat water in the right way, and I think it can be like a huge tool sort of for our health.
Yeah. So what about, it's not so much of a craze anymore, but it was a while back, alkaline water?
Yeah, so alkaline water was very popular when the alkaline diet was put forward, like one of the famous books around that, The pH Miracle, which I was very much into during my days of slamming spirulina and all that sort of stuff. not anymore, no. But yeah, I think alkaline water is, again, this idea that if we have more alkaline things in our diets, then that's going to improve our health. But actually, it's never as straightforward as that. It's not, I wouldn't want to drink highly alkaline water because that's just going to be damaging to my body as well, because your body just wants to have a more neutral pH. Different areas of your body are obviously going to want to have greater acidity, right? So I wouldn't want to dilute my stomach acid by having lots of, say, bicarbonate by sort of too much, because strong acidity is what drives our immunity.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah.
No, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so I think really it's a bit of a fad, the idea that we should have ultra-alkaline water.
So just a second ago you were saying, and apologies that my questions are just all over the place, I'm finding this really fascinating. A second ago you were saying that because water is so attaches itself to everything, you know, it's the universal lubricant, it has the ability to take on, you know, negative traits, if you will. And that probably brings us quite nicely to the water that comes out of your kitchen tap, for example, which has probably not been treated very well. This is not loved and nurtured water. And as a consequence, is more harmful to our body than good.
Well, I think it's always going to be the case where drinking some water is better than none, regardless of the quality. this idea that your tap water is kind of completely safe to drink is just simply not true, because of all the contaminants that are now found in tap water. Does it mean that you can sort of survive on it for a period of time? Yeah, of course. And like, you might get by sort of depending on your body's resilience, but water contains many contaminants, whether that's chlorine and other disinfectant byproducts, volatile organic compounds, endocrine disruptors, heavy metals, among many other things. And it's this cocktail of contaminants which we don't really know what are the effects when you combine all of them together in a small dose over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Because what the research does, it goes, we have this many parts per million of this compound, and that we think that is safe. But what happens if we combine it with all these other things? And this is the kind of cocktail effect that we get now.
Yeah, that's just, I'm just thinking it's the same for like pesticides used in agriculture. You know, you can look it up and find research that says such and such a pesticide is actually like not that damaging and therefore it's fine to put on your food. But actually what we don't know is the effect of all of the hundreds of different chemicals in combination with each other over a long period of time. It's the same idea, right?
Yeah, and there's been lots of like interesting research now on what happens when different pesticides combine and how it kind of can raise their toxicity, for example. One of the interesting things with water treatment is that, so chlorine is the one that a lot of people jump to, right? Because that's the kind of main sort of disinfectant. But what happens with water companies is they add the chlorine to the water supply, but what happens is the water level changes according to whether it's a hot day or a cold or a cooler day. And very often we might be exposed to more chlorine because there's less water to actually dilute it.
In fact,
in 1995 in Cornwall, many people got sick.
From
chlorine exposure. Because what happened was there was a drought that year and the water table got very low, but they still added the same amount of chlorine and many people got sick.
Wow. This is a little tangent, but I I don't know, sometimes have mum guilt about this because, anyway, but haven't really taken my son swimming at all because I don't want to go and swim in a chlorinated swimming pool. Now, I know that obviously he would probably really enjoy it and he will learn to swim at some point, of course. But it really bugs me. And not even so much the being immersed in the water, it's the smell that hits you when you go into like a public swimming pool, because it's, you can just smell the chlorine in the air and it just makes me sort of curl up inside and want to just like go into a hole.
Yeah, it's not a very nice substance to be exposed to, for sure. I think if it's going to be sort of now and then, I don't think it's the worst thing necessarily. But, you know, chlorine's being linked to like various cancers for many years, overexposure, bladder, kidney, for example. So we know that these like these disinfectants are dangerous, but it's really hard to know, you know, how much is kind of suitable. Because like I said, it's actually quite difficult to keep track of the exact amount in the water at any one time, because we have these sort of temperature changes.
Yeah. So I'm just giggling because my computer screensaver's just come on and that's why my face is now like, it looks pink on the recording. You guys don't need to know that because this is audio only. Anyway, shall we talk about water filters? So I'm going to kick things off by saying that I have a Berkey. And now I would like you to tell me if this is good or bad. From the research that I did when I purchased said filter, I felt like I was making a good decision. The interesting thing for me purchasing it was about fluoride and looking into whether my local council fluoridated the water, because what I found out with Berkey is that you can, because you can get a cylinder to put in it that filters out the fluoride, but the ingredient that does that is like an aluminium something.
Yeah.
And this did not feel good to me, so I didn't get that. And I kind of found some evidence to suggest that it could be bad, you know, could kind of contaminate the water with aluminium, and I found evidence suggests that it really didn't. Obviously on the Berkey website it said that it wasn't a problem, but anyway, I don't think Cornwall puts fluoride in their water, so thankfully I didn't actually have to deal with that. But over to you, let's talk about the different water filters. And I will also just say that I began my journey, and this is like, you know, a good few years ago, with just your standard Brita filter. And I think there's an element of, you know, what fits your budget here as well, because you can spend a lot of money on a water filter. So let's round it up.
Yeah, we can run through. It might be good to actually give people an overview of fluoride, because I feel like there's a lot of confusion around
it
is. And so I'll just cover quickly that fluoride,
in its
natural form, you get exposed to something called calcium fluoride, which comes from rocks and it gets into the water supply in sort of some areas. Now, the interesting thing about naturally occurring fluoride is it doesn't dissolve very well, so it has a low solubility. Mm-hmm. So when you're exposed to it, your body doesn't actually absorb that much, and actually it might actually offer you some protection against the more dangerous forms of fluoride, which they add to water supply.
Okay.
By acting as kind of a halogen displacement. So I'm not worried about being exposed to that sort of that type of fluoride at all. What we should be concerned with is being exposed to the these kind of synthetic forms of fluoride, like sodium fluoride, which is a byproduct of the smelting industry, and they have a high solubility, so they're very quickly, and that's why they're used in oral care products, for example. So it's really about the type that is the issue. It's not just like fluoride is bad. And one of the difficulties of fluoride is because it's kind of treated like a mineral, it's quite difficult to remove completely from your water without also removing other things, if that makes sense. So a lot of people get worried about fluoride in water, which I can understand in some areas. But actually, if you look at the amounts even that you're exposed to in food, and in medication, they're much greater levels.
But you're talking naturally occurring at this point, right? You're not talking about synthetic fluoride that's added to the water.
Yeah, so in terms of like food supply, there's often, I'm talking about the sort of more synthetic fluoride, right? And because it's used in things like pesticides, even since the 1950s, and it can end up very much in our food supply. And I think people often just think about water and fluoride, but actually food is also a concern. So, you know, I always say, I think fluoride, it like definitely can be a concern, but one of the best things you can do is actually make sure you're getting adequate intake of the other halogens like iodine, so making sure you're having some seaweed now and then. And that's actually going to offer you also some good protection alongside. So I don't think the goal should necessarily be, I want to try and avoid it completely. So yeah, just to clear up some of the questions, because I know a lot of people just think that it's like all bad.
But I mean, let's talk about the fluoride, and because people will want to know about thyroid, because that's what we hear in conjunction to.
Yeah, so fluoride being a halogen competes with iodine in your body, and iodine is what your thyroid needs to make its thyroid hormones. So when we're exposed to a lot of fluoride, it fills that receptor gap because it looks similar, and that can increase your chance of developing things like hypothyroidism, having a slow thyroid. So this is a good reason why it should not be added to the water supply, because we're already getting adequate amounts just from our food and sort of medications as such. And also one of the other concerns, or maybe even more of a concern for me, is that fluoride has a great affinity for the pineal gland. It likes to gather there, where you can get calcification issues. So I always find that very interesting. So, you know, it's not something that we want to be exposed to in high amounts.
Yeah. So on the water filters then, I'm just thinking about my Berkey filter. I usually I use a Berkey, and then I use some Elite electrolyte drops in my water. I don't know if that is sufficient to kind of remineralize the water, but is that cause for concern that we have these very efficient water filters that actually can also filter out beneficial compounds in the water?
Yeah, so a lot of filters, particularly reverse osmosis filters, will like basically filter out everything. I'm not sure exactly how much Berkey impacts the actual mineral state of the water, because most water filters will allow some of those minerals to go through, unless it is an RO system. You know, I drank pure reverse osmosis water for a long time, and it just gave me a stomachache every day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was like, why do I have this stomachache? And it's because if you strip water of all of its natural dissolved solids, it becomes quite volatile and it becomes more acidic. And like we were saying, because water is the universal kind of lubricant and it wants to bind to what it's exposed to, when you drink very low total dissolved solid water and it enters into your body, which has a high dissolved solid count, there's going to be some osmosis there where that water is going to try and balance itself out, because water is always trying to increase its kind of mineral content. And there's also research that says that if we drink, you know, these kind of distilled or plain RO water, that can also delay gastric emptying as well.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I just to clarify, I just did a quick Google. A Berkey is not a reverse osmosis filter.
Yeah. So I think a Berkey uses an sort of activated carbon.
It has these big black carbon filters that you fit in.
Yeah, and like I've always said that activated carbon is a great entry-level filter, and it's kind of one of the oldest, right? So you have this large surface area of carbon that can capture over 80 different chemicals, and it can reduce at least another 50. So you'll get reductions in chlorine, chloramines, VOCs, disinfecting byproducts, pesticide residues, and you can also get a fairly good reduction of synthetic estrogen as well. But as with any of these things, it really depends. You have lots of different factors contributing to your water quality. What is the water coming in? What is the speed at which it passes through the filter? And then what actually is the filter? So all of those things can change your outcome. So it's very hard to say for sure for any one person what exactly the outcome will be.
Yeah.
But I think Carbon Block is a great place to start if you're kind of looking into your water journey.
Yeah, one thing I do remember about my Brita filter from way back when is that it did filter very fast, and the Berkey by comparison takes, it's actually very irritating, it takes so long to filter the water. So if you've let it go all the way to the bottom, like happens in my household, it can be, you can then be without water for a while until it kind of trickles through. Do you want to give us an overview then of the filters that are available on the market, like the Brita, like there's one called Fox, which is kind of new, and kind of tell us the pros and cons?
Yeah, so there's different types of filters you can get in terms of the kind of actual setup, first of all. So you can have gravity-fed ones like your Berkey, which does have some limitations in the sense that it's not forcing water necessarily through a membrane, so you might not get as a reduction as if you had actual flow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got ones that kind of go under your sink and actually attach. They're more kind of fiddly. And then you've got ones that actually attach to the end of your kitchen faucet, which is the one I'm releasing on Elevide, which we can talk about a little bit later. But yeah, so a lot of filters have this kind of setup where the first one is a 5-micron filter. And that basically is usually a kind of plastic polymer that basically reduces the turbidity of water, so like the cloudiness. And that's often used in, or kind of form of it is used in like Brita filters. And that basically gives you a kind of slightly cleaner taste. It doesn't look as cloudy, so that's quite an appealing. However, that kind of 5-micron doesn't really do much in terms of what it filters. I mean, it might filter some large sort of parasites maybe, and sort of dirt and things like that. Then you have your kind of activated carbon, which is almost standard practice in most water filters to have that, because it's such an effective way of reducing a broad range of contaminants. Then after that, you'll sometimes get what's known as a sort of KDF filter. I don't know if you've come across that. So KDF filters are often used in like shower filters. And what they're made of is like a zinc sort of copper alloy. And they use this process of reduction and oxidation. And what that does is as the water passes over the resin, it sort of changes these heavy metal compounds into less sort of harmful compounds.
So would that be what you would find in something like the Hello Clean shower filter?
Exactly, yeah. And that's because it's not it's not like filtering per se. It's actually just changing the structure of the compound into less harmful forms by that oxidation reduction. So this is why, so you don't get such an impediment of flow rate, and the resin can last a long time. So KDF filters are quite nice, and they're often used in shower filters. And
why would they not be used in like a drinking water filter then?
They are often as well.
Okay.
Yeah, they often use alongside. So often with the more extensive water filters, you might get like what's called like a, I don't know, like a 10 cartridge water filter. And often one of those will be a sort of KDF filter. But I'm not such a fan of these setups where you have like 10 different filters to change, because I think a lot of it is kind of a ploy to get you to just constantly kind of buy these new filters. But obviously, if you want to have like completely pure clean water, then if you combine these technologies like a 5-micron, a carbon block, an ion exchange, okay, if you combine them all together, then obviously you're going to have this quite strong effect. But I think you can achieve almost kind of similar results with actually just combining a lot of those technologies in one filter, which is what we've done at Elevide, and it's just to try to keep things a bit more sort of contained.
So the one that you're bringing out just sits on the faucet. So is it quite small then? It just kind of goes on the end of your tap?
Yeah, so it goes on the end of the tap, and then it has a cable that actually leads to the filter. So you can flip between tap water or filtered water.
Okay.
So it is like a unit that sits on the side, and it has two cartridges, and one is what we call a multi-spiral cartridge, which basically encompasses mechanical filtration down to very low micron. It has an ion exchange. It has some impregnated silver, which can help to kill those pathogenic bacteria. It also has some absorption capabilities for other contaminants as well. And that's basically the first filter, and that will do a really good job of removing things like microplastics, which can actually be missed in a straight carbon filter because they become very small.
Okay.
And then the filter leads to a carbon block at the end, which just further increases those effects and just improves the taste as well. But one of the neat things about that are this spiral cartridge is that the filter is shaped like a honeycomb structure. So the water passes through kind of a more natural state. Mm. And it also helps reduce calcite, which is often responsible for that kind of harder lime scale and things like kidney stones. So it should stop your kettle from furring up quite as much. Because my aim was with the filter was to try and make things as close to sort of reverse osmosis, but without actually using an RO filter.
Mm.
Because, you know, RO filters are very wasteful.
Can you explain, Matt, how a reverse osmosis filter works?
Yeah, so with an RO filter, water is basically forced through a tiny membrane. And so it requires quite a bit of pressure. And basically only the water molecule can really pass through. So that means the like minerals can't pass through as well, but that also means all the sort of contaminants. And this type of water was originally kind of for like research purposes, because it's not, I wouldn't call it water that's necessarily safe to drink. Mm. And so if you really want to strip water completely, then that is the filter to get. But the problem is that the water that comes out is going to be more acidic. Right. It's going to have, again, because it's got a very low total dissolved solid. And so, for me, it just didn't really work in the end because it really irritated my stomach. But that's basically how it works. It also has quite a lot of waste. And that's why they're banned in many countries, even in areas of India, because like for every 1 liter of water you get out of a reverse osmosis system, you may lose 2 liters.
Wow. And are these the ones that would sort of typically sit underneath the kitchen sink?
Yeah. Yeah. And they'll often be paired with like a carbon block, and maybe something else. And they're very common now, but, I just found it hard with reverse osmosis filters to get the water back to a more natural state after. The water isn't very like thirst quenching. So mm-hmm. I think you can, because minerals and water are what give water that thirst quenching kind of feel.
Yeah.
Like it should feel kind of full. Like, and what we're trying to do is mimic something close to kind of spring water, which does have these sort of dissolved solids in. And it's not even like, a lot of people will say you don't have to add minerals to water because you get all your minerals from food. But I don't necessarily add minerals to my water to actually obtain those minerals. It's more to make the water more whole again and to give it a more natural state. So it's more for that reason.
I remember you once saying, was it you? I think it was you, that if you drink mineralized water, you basically don't need to drink as, like, you'd done an experiment or something, you'd realize that you didn't need to drink as much and you'd only had like a couple of glasses of water that day, but you were fine. Because was this you?
Yeah definitely I always find this with my clients, that when they start adding some minerals to their water, they don't feel as thirsty, you know.
Yeah.
Because often when we are thirsty, we are kind of, your body is kind of craving something. It may actually just be the minerals that it's craving. Mm. And actually by drinking constant amounts of water, you may just be only sort of diluting things even further. And
yeah.
Obviously, if you're, say, estrogen dominant, and then you're consuming lots of water on top of that, that can also exacerbate things, because estrogen causes you to take on more water. So it's like a bit of a vicious circle, and it can be not so good. And one of the interesting things I also found is that, I don't know if you've ever noticed that if you drink a lot of just plain tap water, it can make you feel quite like bloated.
I don't know. It's been so many years since I've drunk standard tap water. I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Because one of the observations I found is that when I started experimenting with some of these structuring technologies, like vortexing, for example, you can drink a lot of the water without feeling bloated. It's an interesting thing. And often when you drink a lot of tap water, it's like it doesn't feel like it's really being digested as well.
I mean, I certainly find that if I'm really thirsty, just drinking the water that comes out of my Berkey filter on its own doesn't hit the spot. And that if I add my mineral, if I add electrolytes, you know, if I add minerals to that, then it's just like so good. The kind of saltiness is like exactly what I want.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's like really hits the spot, doesn't it? It's really nice.
Exactly, yeah. So I think it's more about making water, giving it a more kind of wholeness, and actually that's how it should be, because water's always seeking to include these dissolved solids in its water, and I think there's lots of health benefits from drinking mineral rich water. I mean, there was a group, the Hunzas in northern Pakistan, they thrived off drinking mineral rich water from the Himalayas. And they had like crazy high life expectancy. Obviously, there are other factors involved, but I think there's something about drinking that sort of mineral-rich water which can really improve your health.
So maybe to round up, if let's make this like usable info for people, based on budget, can you give us a recommendation for a water filter? So like low, medium, and high. And you're very, very welcome to include your own products.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah, so the water filter we're releasing won't be till a little bit later in sort of January time. And so I would say your first level of water filtration is a sort of carbon block filter. That's basically that's your sort of level one.
Can you give us a brand name so that people know what you mean?
There's like brands in the UK like Osmio, I think, sell quite a few that you could look at. But you can buy many now that just plug in under your sink very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing is to look for is just the actual technology itself. So just look, does it contain activated carbon? Because having all these Brita filters is just ridiculous. It's just a lot of waste. It's not really doing anything to your water. So the main things you want to get out are like, you want to remove those heavy hitters first. Like, you want to reduce the chlorine. You want to reduce some of these sort of pesticide residues and heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a nice place to start. And then if you want to get into like more serious filtration, then you can look into reverse osmosis filters. But I would just say, like, I would never start with that if you're just starting out on getting a water filter system, because you're going to have to do some work to make the water better after.
Yeah.
The one that we're releasing is sort of a middle ground. So it will be between a sort of £200 and £300 mark. And that will have like, it's like carbon block filtration plus like sort of many other things. And it will give you very good clean tasting water that shouldn't be a huge hassle to change all the time, because you don't want a water filter that you're like constantly having to sort of worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the things that drew me to the Berkey, is that the filters last years. So it's an expensive initial outlay. I think it was, I mean, depending on the size, I think mine was about £350. You know, like with the Brita filter, you're replacing the cartridge every like 3 to 4 weeks, and you're right, huge amount of waste and really expensive in the long term.
Yeah, and I think the Berkey is like a fine option. I just think they're a little bit...
Go on.
Kind of...
Say it.
I think they're a bit overrated a lot of the time, because they're often the go-to. They're so like well-known. But I think... I mean, I can see the appeal, because you can just have it on your counter, because it's gravity fed. So I think, you know, if you have access to one, you can get one on offer maybe. I think that's also fine. But just have a look at the technology in them. That's the thing that people need to look into, and like, what is it actually using? And see if it meets your needs. If you want to have more extensive filtration and you're really worried, then you will have to spend quite a bit more.
Okay. I came across, I'm just seeing if I can find it now. Yes, Is this it? I found the most beautiful. Because let's be honest, many of us really enjoy our kitchens as spaces. And, you know, sometimes you don't want a massive ugly water filter clogging up your work surface. I found the most beautiful ceramic, like hand-thrown water filters. I can't remember the brand. Endless Rhythm. Have you come across those?
No, but I think I saw you post about it.
Yeah, it is gravity fed. I'll send you a link and you can have a look.
If it uses, because so like ceramic is another type of water filter medium, and if it's just ceramic, that basically is kind of similar to a 5 micron in that it just kind of filters very low level things.
Look how pretty
it does look very nice.
Is yours gonna look like that, Matt?
I mean, look, I'll send you one and you can be the judge. I'm trying to make, I think it looks quite nice, but it's not, maybe not as quite as nice looking as that
so
one.
So this one will set you back about £500.
Yeah.
Which is quite a lot, isn't it?
I think with the water filters, the one that we're actually releasing, I didn't want it to be something that was going to really break the budget of a lot of people, because I think everyone should have access to good quality water and it shouldn't cost, you know, loads of money.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you want to buy, if you have the money, then of course go ahead and get one of these super fancy ones. But with this one I'm releasing, I wanted it to kind of give people a good amount of sort of water filtration that didn't sort of break the bank.
Yeah, definitely. So just trying to think what would people have burning questions. I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I think the Elevide filter that you're bringing out sounds amazing. I wish that you'd brought it out before I invested in a Berkey.
You could always sell the Berkey.
I could sell the Berkey, yeah. I suppose.
I don't know if
there's like a secondhand market for those. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to make people feel that are listening that also have a Berkey that it's a bad option, because it's actually not. I think it's a really great filter.
No, it's not. I think it's, yeah, definitely. And it's well recommended by many people. And I think it can give you a very good broad reduction of lots of contaminants.
Yeah. And I think if there's anything to take away from this, it's that if you are someone that still drinks tap water, maybe don't.
Yeah,
maybe look into it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think nowadays you see more and more people talking about what's actually in tap water. I know Andrew Huberman was talking about it recently, and I think that sort of, because he has lots of followers, people started sort of having more of a conversation about it.
Yeah.
And you have to see it this way, like most of your body is water. So if you're thinking about where to start with your health, and I often say this to my clients, like you kind of do need to get some form of filtration, because if that's what your body is mostly made of.
Mm, totally. Yeah. It's so, that's a really nice point to end on, because I think we all think about food a lot, don't we? And like
Absolutely.
Lifestyle and wellness and all of these things. But actually something as simple as water can make a really big difference to the way you feel on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Matt, for coming on the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you got to the end of my really unprofessional questioning and, to be frank, rambling. It's been a while since I've been behind the microphone, but I've really enjoyed it. Hope everyone has found this useful. Matt, if you haven't already guessed, is the founder of a fantastic company called Elevide, which predominantly at the moment makes supplements, but is branching out into water filtration. So Matt, can you just tell us, I was going to try and spell Elevide, but I am highly dyslexic and I don't want to try and do that live on the podcast. So could you please tell people how to find you?
Yeah, so they can either find me from Elevide, which would just be Elivide.
What does that mean, by the way?
Well, that's a good question, Grace. One of the things we were looking into when I was thinking about the name was trying to combine the words elevation and vida for life.
Mm, nice.
And yeah, but honestly, like a lot of the time, it's just finding something that is available. Because you have so much like competition now in the sort of domain space.
Right.
But yeah, you can go, I mean, you can spend a long time thinking about names, and now I feel like that's the kind of one I'll probably go with for the foreseeable future. But yeah, people can find me on there, or they can search just my name, Matt Jarrisy, where I write articles and things. And
also you can work with Matt with as a nutritional therapist, we should say.
Yes, although I mean at the moment my practice is very full, but I think it's been a bit tough recently trying to juggle Elevide and sort of my clients, because Elevide's grown quite a lot in the past couple of years. So now it's like I'm trying to find this balance between the sort of two of them. But yeah, people can always email me to check.
Great. Well, thanks, Matt, and I hope you have a wonderful evening. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I will see you again soon. Thank you so much for tuning in to State of Mind. I am sorry this episode was so long coming. Hopefully, we'll be back with another episode for you soon. Bye-bye.